Raygun helps thousands of customer-centric software teams detect, diagnose, and resolve performance issues faster and more efficiently. And now, for a limited time, if you switch your application monitoring to Raygun, you will receive up to 20,000 in free usage credit. That's 20,000 US dollars. It's never been a better time to make the switch, save thousands, and empower your team with the visibility and insights they need to deliver a flawless customer experience. Visit raygun.com/switch to apply today for $20,000 in free credit. That's www.raygun.com/switch. Hi, this is Scott Hanselman, and this is another episode of Hansel Minutes. Today I'm talking with Joe Carlson, developer advocate at MongoDB. And just for ethical reasons, because I'm that kind of guy, we have had Mongo as an advertiser on the show before. That is not related to this show. In fact, I met you, Joe, at Codeland recently.
I did. First of all, just thank you so much for having me on. Love the show. Great. And it was so great to meet you. Codeland was an amazing conference. And your amazing panelist.
I thought it was great. I really enjoy spending time with new or early in career people. And we got to do that and spend time with them and lift them up, which was really fun.
Oh, I totally agree. I was actually just talking to my coworkers about how that was one of the best conferences I've attended all year. Like, I feel like everyone's trying to figure out this virtual conference scene. And I'm wild about it. It was great.
Yeah, Codeland definitely did that. And Saran Yitbarak, who started Code Newbies and started Codeland and then subsequently sold that to Dev.2, they've all kept the spirit of what Saran started, which I think is really cool.
I totally agree. I totally agree.
She's a joy. So we got to spend time talking about people who are early in career. And I know that you have a passion for newbies getting involved in tech. And since you do work at Mongo, I have noticed that trying to get a newbie up to speed on database access seems to be a lot harder than Hello World. You know, it's kind of like, let's do Hello World. Okay, now we're doing Hello World in a div. Now we've done a Hello World in color. And now here's your Mongo connection string. And then,
Oh, totally. And there's like, it's a lot of things you have to worry about, like, yeah, security and getting things set up and like schema, how to make queries on it. You know what I mean? It's, yeah. And especially like in the days too, where like, you have to set everything up on your own. It's just a lot of work. It's a lot of work. Yeah, totally agree.
Back in the day, there was when I learned databases, there was either Oracle and there was SQL, and we spent all of our time really thinking about things in terms of tabular data. That was the time, gosh, from the 80s through much of the 90s, all I did was tabular data. I didn't even think about the idea of a document database.
Yeah, totally. And people still do today. I still do too sometimes, you know, but it's, rows and columns, tables, rows and columns, normalization. I don't know, even that too. And for me, the hard part with databases, like tabular or just like relational databases, setting up schemas and then like being able to query them. You know what I mean? Usually need like an ORM or something to access that data.
And the whole select star from books or select star from author, that was about as far as we got.
Yeah, I know. I'm like embarrassed because I'm a developer advocate at a database company. But I'm not doing like fancy joins or like wild. I never did anything too
well. That was actually how they would keep you out of an interview, right? That's the gatekeeping question. It's like, let's do a left outer join. And I'm like, what's the difference between that and the other kind of outer join, right?
I still forget.
Well, I still forget how to center a div, so we're even, right?
Totally, yeah.
So trying to make that easy, I think, was important for people. SQL was kind of a language within a language. You know, you'd have whatever language you're doing, you'd open a string, and now it's a new language, and it's hidden between these quotes.
Oh, totally. And I think that's why MongoDB blew up quickly, especially in the JavaScript communities too. It's like the language is very like intuitive to JavaScript people, the dot notation and how you're accessing data. And like even like, and I think most importantly too is just how you're structuring it, like saving it in a document or like an object like thing, right? Since as opposed to translating it to a rows and columns type data structure.
And it feels like there was a time when web APIs were starting, JSON was coming out, and then Mongo presented itself in a kind of a web API. It's like, okay, we're on a port. Mm. We're not HTTP, but for all intents, we kind of feel like we are.
Totally.
And all of that familiarity got people in a comfortable place.
Oh, totally. I mean, we're just sending JSON. Like, we're using BSON, which is like a little bit fancier than JSON, but it feels like JSON, right? Like, you just send that around. And I totally agree. Yeah. And like, we're not using HTTP, but you're right. We're setting up a database server, which, and then you're making requests over the web to mm-hmm. go and send and receive JSON data, which is, again, what we're like, as like developers, that's what we're using. Like, we don't have right. to like, I don't need to like restructure that in my brain every single time I want to move that over someplace new.
Exactly. And then that mapped really directly to the SQL terms that I was used to. So databases are databases. Tables in SQL are collections, right?
Yeah.
In Mongo.
Yep.
And then rows, this one took me a second though. Rows are documents.
Yes. Yep, exactly. Yeah. I have like mixed feelings, honestly, about it. It's like, because we're like doing pretty much the same thing and like but using different names for it. I feel that way sometimes about Git too. It's like, it's very, kind of, it can be overwhelming for new developers, like understanding clones and PRs and all. And it feels more confusing than it really is. But you're totally right. Like, yeah, databases, collections, indexes are still the same.
Columns are fields.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yep.
But regardless of how you name it, though, the idea of looking at the result of it, is it Bison? You say
Bison? I don't know.
Bison? I don't know. JSON? Bison? Okay.
Yep.
Okay. It comes back to you as JSON because that's how you view it because JSON is human readable. And you just go, oh, okay. It's name value pairs. But let me ask you this. In the relational database world, I have like four columns, like student name, and age. Hmm. In Mongo, is it true that I can have fields that don't always line up? Like I can have different documents with different fields. I can just add a column.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
Arbitrarily.
I'm going to throw out object-oriented jargon there, but polymorphism, right? You can like change the shape of it. And actually, I think we used to bill ourselves as a schemaless database, but like, and actually this is probably, I didn't even know this honestly before I started working at MongoDB, but you can now enforce schemas to like you would at a traditional, like a regular row and column SQL database. But yeah, you can change the shape of it, make it as flexible as you want. Like for example, I just built a internet connected litter box and I added a couple new sensors to it recently. So I was able to like update that time series data with MongoDB and I didn't have to like go and it was like old data anyway, so I didn't really care. And there are instances where you would want to make sure you're updating all your previous ones, but this case, right, it's like old IoT data. I don't care. It's garbage anyways. Yeah, it was super easy, right? You can just add it up. And again, I think that like makes it easier for new developers because right, like you can make changes to it, especially if you're like just prototyping or kind of setting something up quickly.
So interesting. So hang on, you didn't do a migration like from one table to another and then massage your old data. You just said, whatever, here's a new column and that's how I'll do it from now on.
Yeah. And like there are, like if I was running a bank on MongoDB, hypothetically, right? Like I would definitely want to be updating old records to keep that data clean. But how I was using it is like I had a IoT time series data. So it's like basically every day I just kind of collect the number of times my cat goes to the bathroom. But and like I don't really care like honestly about the data from a month ago. It's a personal project, right? Like I could have updated it, but it didn't.
Interesting.
Like that's the situation, it doesn't matter.
Okay, well, let me ask you that though. So you just juxtaposed two things, which I think are kind of ironic. First, how often your cat does his business, and a bank, you know, which are actually more closely related than you'd think, realize.
Yeah.
But the instance there is one of them is a fun hobbyist thing, mm-hmm. which Mongo and a schemaless database could enable, mm-hmm. and the other one is like really important stuff that we need to like have important data types and schemas. Mm-hmm. And you're saying that a document database like this could enable both of those, the hobbyist and the production workload at a bank.
Yeah, totally. I mean, that's the idea. I think, I think especially now that you can enforce data schema types. So if I'm a DBA running a MongoDB database or whatever, I can say developers can't add new stuff, or I say they need to have XYZ like fields, and they can kind of play around with some extra stuff. Like you can be as flexible as you want with it. And like if I was scaling this up to be like a litter box I'm selling on Etsy or something like that, I probably would start putting some like safeguards and rails on it, but just for setting it up, it works just fine.
Is guards and rails just a phrase, or is that an actual thing? That
it's not. It's just like, but like in starting to enforce that stuff.
Right.
From a database level.
Right. So a policy where it's like, I don't want to allow data outside of this range or whatever into the database.
Yeah, no, totally. And I feel like that's a common criticism too of like MongoDB is like your data can get messy if you're not enforcing a schema. And I think that's totally valid and true, you know? But I think you have the option to be able to enforce it as much as you want, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So do you have to think about it ahead of time? Like I have, so I don't know if I told you this or not, but I actually have a production Mongo database that's very important to me that I've ran now for almost 7 years, and it's actually my blood sugar data. Mm-hmm. So true story, I have, I think folks that listen to the show know that I'm type 1 diabetic, and I run an application called Night Scout, which is an open source app. It runs in Azure. And it runs on Node, but the back end currently is running in Mongo Atlas. I actually moved it. There was recently MLab, which was purchased by Mongo, I guess, and then it turned into Atlas. So I migrated over to Atlas, and my blood sugar is all managed, you know, up there. Is the schema set like ahead of time, or if I'm a hobbyist, can I just pick another column and add it?
Yeah, absolutely. And like with that data, like depending on how much, like. It depends on what the field you're adding or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like if you need essential metadata that's you need to be there over time. There's not like migrations don't exist like you were used to with an SQL database. But typically you would write a script then that would loop through all your documents and update them with a new field.
Okay. So that's pretty typical. I would expect that if I was doing database work.
And it's an option. But again, it depends on what it is. Like if it's an essential piece of metadata, like if some brand new medical information that we need to be there every time. Cool. Or you're graphing on this thing, and if it's not there, your whole application is going to break. Probably want to run a migration on it.
Okay.
I've seen some schema patterns too, where like you label, like you have a new field that labels what schema version it is. So like labeling it like 1.1, and then I update with a new field, and that's 1.2, and it can do some fancier scripts to update your old schema.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay, so I'm actually logging in right now, and I'm looking at my blood sugar. It's got all the food that I've eaten in the last 6 years. Every carbohydrate shows up in here. Seriously, this is like legit. You should check it out. I've got all my blood sugar, and this is every 5 minutes, 24 hours a day, all the time. And there's a lot of information in here, but some of it I don't really understand. I've got my blood sugar value, which is a number, so it's not in quotes. But I don't know if this is a Mongo thing or if this is a decision that this group made. I have a date, which is a number I don't recognize. It's a big, long number.
Oh, yeah.
And then I have date string, which I totally recognize with time zone information. Is that a Mongoism or is that a data, the person who designed this system?
Is it, it's two separate fields and one's a string and one's.
That's a great, yes, it is two separate fields. One is a date with a long, long number, not in quotes. And one is a date string with a typical ISO 8601 date.
Yeah, that's weird. I would, because I think the advantage of BSON over JSON is that you get these native data types that you're used to with an SQL database. And JSON, like as you know, everything's a string.
Right.
Like, a number is a string, and string's a string, a GeoJSON data. But it should be an ISO date. It should be, but maybe it's old thing, or maybe someone's like hashing some data or something like that.
Well, it's been a very long time, so it's really interesting. But it shows the flexibility of what they're choosing to do. They've got this date, which is a long number. I assume it's probably milliseconds since the beginning of the Unix epoch.
Right, the beginning of time. That's in 1971.
Beginning of time, exactly. Yeah. That's when all time started.
Yeah.
And then the date string, of course, it makes sense. It looks like a regular date string. Mm-hmm. But it makes me wonder about some of the reporting, and we talked a little bit about thinking about or not thinking about indexes.
Yep.
The reports that I run on my blood sugar are not super fast. And I'm starting to suspect that maybe I don't have any indexing at all. And I'm running through 250,000 documents in a for loop.
It might be. That's always hard too. You're on Atlas right now?
I am. I'm looking at it.
But like one of the advantages of running things in the cloud now is like you get some more advanced tooling to figure that out. And if you're actually in there right now, they have something called Performance Advisor.
Mm-hmm. I see it.
Yeah. If you go in there, it will start.
Look at that. Automated index recommendations.
Exactly. So like it can, based on the queries you're making often, it's going to start recognizing that like, hey, these are running slow and like you do these a lot. You might want to consider that.
Okay. So let's talk about that.
Yep.
Back in the day, we used to put a person on a plane and fly them to my company to teach us about like, oh, here's the index you need to do, the clustered indexes. Like you could get paid full time to just say clustered index in meetings.
Yeah.
And now it's automated. What's going on here?
I know. I think like all of us too, like, I mean, when we get to databases in general, my personal opinion is like no one cares about sharding and scalability and like auto healing and having to worry about like distributing data and make it fast. Like all we want is I want to put data in. I want to make sure it's still there later on and I want it to be fast.
Yeah.
And like the less I have to worry about the infrastructure, like I think that's, I mean, that's better for like develop. That's what we want. I think we're seeing like generally in programming, the easiest tool wins. Like if you're asking too much of the developer community, like figure it out. And like, I feel like we've been in the early days of like databases and scalability and like our data needs are massively growing up. And honestly, it's like, it's hard to even ask experts to like fully grok all that information. And like, it's data, right? Like, it, like machine learning, like running machine learning models on data. Like that's how we do it. And MongoDB is a database. I don't know. So like my predictions for the future too, is like, I like right now, like our performance advisor is just like making recommendations and a human being goes through and decides where they want to enable the recommendations.
Right. I can look at these things. It's looking automatically. And then I decide I like it. And I don't like that one.
Exactly. I'm guessing in the next 5-10 years, we're like, that'll be all fully automated. We'll have like full scalability, like auto sharding, auto indexing, auto index removal if things aren't, you know what I mean? Like,
right. Self-tuning.
Exactly. Self-healing, because again, we like, no one care. I don't care.
It's funny that you're saying that and then people who might be listening and thinking like, hey, I don't care. That's not good.
Yeah. But, maybe that sounds bad.
No, but it's actually really interesting because I used to tell this story. I still tell the story actually that, you and I just met, but I don't know if you know Joe, but I have a really long resume because I'm a rock star.
I've heard.
You know, the second page of my resume, my 3-page resume is scaling a web farm.
Yeah.
Cause I spent like 10 years in the late 90s, like innovating in the space.
Yeah.
And then I meet like a younger person and they go, oh, I'm going to scale this website. And they click a checkbox.
Yeah. And it's done.
And then I just rip the second page of my resume out because it's just garbage. It's just 10 years of my experience is wasted. And and the reason that I tell that story is it's like, you know, I could be sad about that, or I could say that's really exciting that I don't have to think about that anymore because we've literally baked best practices into the tooling. So scaling a web farm isn't rocket surgery anymore.
No, I mean, that's like generally that's a massive advantage of the cloud. It's cheap to scale or descale, right? Add new data. And like, and before too, like, a long time ago, data was expensive to save. You know what I mean? You're paying $1,000 for a couple, like a 25 megabyte IBM hard drive. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
And it's just, it's cheap now. Like, and the expensive part now is our time. Like developers' time is one of the biggest cost centers. Like,
good point.
And infrastructure, like I've never had a job where like infrastructure costs do get expensive, but if it's like, this is going to cost us 300 developer hours or let's spin up a new cluster. Like, usually it just spin up.
It's funny that you say that though, because like you look at the cost of different things and it's like, oh, $9 a month.
Yeah.
You know, but honestly, you have to really balance that versus your time and the amount of effort. Like I could go and click and say, I want this recommendation and I'll pay $9 a month and I'm going to get this much more perf, or I'm going to spend how many hours trying to figure this out myself. And that is that the cloud is really a slider bar directed. It's connected directly to my wallet.
Yes.
But it's also saving me a huge amount of time.
Yeah, I totally agree. And that's like, there's good and bad things about that. Cause like, and you bring up a good point. Like there's still people who prefer setting up their own databases. Cool. Like there's tons of advantages to doing that too. Being cheaper is probably a big one and you get more control over that, like the actual deployment, which is great. There's definitely use case for it. 99.9% of use cases, it doesn't matter, right? And like personally, my time is important. And if I want to spend my weekend like futzing with scaling a database to the next level or like hanging out with my friends, I'm probably going to go hang out with my friends.
Right. Know? Yeah. No one wants to manage databases if they can avoid it. And that's why MongoDB made MongoDB Atlas, a global cloud database service that runs on AWS, GCP, and Azure. You can deploy a fully managed MongoDB database in minutes with just a few clicks or a few API calls. MongoDB Atlas automates deployment, automates updates, handles scaling, and more so that you can focus on your application instead of taking care of your database. You can get started free at mongodb.com/atlas. Now, if you're already managing a MongoDB deployment, Atlas has a live migration service, so you can migrate it easily with minimal downtime and then get back to what matters. Stop managing your database and start using MongoDB Atlas. Well, that's the thing that's nice, is now we have the choice. We can go and do these things. And if we use Mongo as an example, and we can talk about some other databases as well, these aren't things that you can't run locally. Like, you could spin up even a Docker container with a little Mongo database and do a little volume mount if you wanted to. And that's totally cool as well.
Yep.
But then less things are automated for you.
Yes. And we actually just released, I think it's a Kubernetes, Kubernetes plugin. So like, you can set up your own self-hosted auto-scaling instances of it too. So like, you can get complicated with it too, as much as you want. but I prefer to keep things easy if I possibly can.
Wow. It seems like so nothing is a black box anymore. Like, even the idea that I could have my own kind of almost my own Atlas running in Kubernetes, auto-scaling, healing, and all that kind of stuff. I could do that as well.
Totally. Absolutely. It's like totally pop. Again, I don't know anything about Kubernetes, but if I did, I may set that up.
You would set that up so you wouldn't have to think about Mongo.
Yeah, exactly. No, but like, again, I just want fast data. I want to be easy to work with, and I want to make sure it's like I get what I put in it quickly. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. It's which I think is like, I think databases and web apps in general, and like MongoDB, we start getting into like, especially when you're talking like huge databases, you get like sharding and scaling and like distributed databases around the world, and like, but like more broadly, like distributed programming is really hard and presents a lot of problems. You know, and I think, and obviously problems like start really easily. Like, I think like a lot of developers probably have the experience of like setting up a MongoDB database. You just have a single self-hosted database on your computer. You're paying for the free community edition. Cool. Like, no problem. But if you start getting up to like Amazon or, you know, the big websites of the world, that's when you start getting some of the complicated stuff.
It's interesting that you mentioned sharding, because scaling out and being able to do stuff like that, distributing data across multiple machines, used to be also really complicated as well. Mm-hmm. I was surprised when I put my blood sugar data on Atlas that it already has like 3 shards.
Yeah, no, totally.
Like a primary and 2 secondaries. And it's like, well, this is kind of funny, by the way, 6 years, every 5 minutes of all my blood sugar is only 250 megs.
Love that. That's, yeah.
Which is crazy. I don't know. Like, that's amazing to me. Like,
that is wild. Yeah.
My life.
It'd be huge. Yeah, totally. It's like, you're literally your life.
The free one gave me 2 secondaries and a primary. I assume that's for in case anything goes wrong, backups. My blood sugar is available.
Yep. Absolutely. That's like our default. You have typically 2 backups and a main. And like, if one goes down, the data's still there. Just helps keep it safe. But yeah, no, that it's wild. I think, especially like if you're like doing a hobby project too, it's like people greatly overestimate the amount of data they're going to be using. You know, and especially if you have like just saving a document with a couple fields in it, you're probably good.
I see people try to go and do the to-do. Like, I want to make a to-do application. Okay, first I'll start with my 1 gig database. I'm like, no, you won't.
You're
no,
fine. You won't. Totally.
You're fine. That's adorable.
Generally, like, my recommendation too for this stuff is like, start easy, start with what you know, and like, don't pay for what you need. And especially if you're like doing an unhosted thing, like auto scaling is a piece of cake. You know what I mean? Just like, do the free edition, try it out, do a single cluster. Don't get too complicated with it.
You know, it's interesting. Not that I don't want to like give your company money or anything, but like the free edition for the hobby stuff that I've been doing has worked really great. Yep. And I've also, on the Azure side, I've really squeezed the heck out of their free stuff as well. People think that if you work for Microsoft, you get free Azure time. You don't. So I don't want to spend any more than I have to. So, you know, being able to run a small hobby app for either free or like less than $10 has been hugely, hugely helpful.
And I don't think we're alone in that. I don't either. And I've been like developing demo apps at MongoDB now for a couple of years. And like, I'm not going to go over the free. I've never gone over the free edition. Most of the projects I use, like 99% of the projects I use are hosted for free somewhere, which is so nice. Also, I'm curious about the Azure. Do you guys get like, you guys don't get like a, do you have like a pool you can like use at Azure resources or like get paid back?
So for folks who don't know, sorry, my day job, I work for Microsoft. The podcast is my side thing.
Yes.
You can log in as your work email and you get like a work account, but you have to have a reason for it to exist. Mm. And you have to like attach it to, like, has to exist for a reason. You have to be like, yeah, I'm doing this for work. I'm doing this for this. I can't run my blog or whatever on free.
That makes sense.
On free time.
It's going to be so vaguely connected to work.
Yeah. So then we get what are called MSDN or Microsoft Developer Network accounts. And that gives us, I think, like $100 or something of free time. But, Just like with Mongo, you want to compress it and make it things as small as possible and use as little as possible and get away with as much as possible.
Yeah.
I've been running 19 websites on one single Azure instance of like an app service for many years because I just keep stacking them like Tetris pieces.
Yeah. No, that's amazing.
I don't want to spend any money on this thing.
No, that's great. I always think when I make a new side project, I'm like, this one's going to be huge. And it never is. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's like, this is the one I'll need the top of the line.
Exactly. But it never is. I totally agree. I'm still stacking stuff up on
Well, and so back to the original part of the conversation, which is when we're getting folks started in software, like Code Newbies and our friends at Code Newbies and our friends at Codeland. Mm-hmm. Being able to go and whether it be Amazon or Azure or Mongo or all of the above, like use those free accounts.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah, make some, and like you're still using the real thing. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah, they're not neutered. They're really the full Azure.
Yep. Oh, totally. And if you ever do need to scale up, maybe you can convince your place of employment to help you out. But yeah, just jump in. You know what I mean? There's so many, like there's free deployments, there's free data hosting, there's open source tooling. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm actually right here. I'm looking at azure.com/free, and it's like what there's free products every month for 12 months, and it's like 5 gigs of storage and 5 gigs of file storage and 250 gigs of SQL. And if you're looking at that and you're like, my to-do app is going to blow right through that.
Yeah.
No, it really isn't.
Yeah. No, I think generally the cloud too, like that's been a huge advantage too. Like you pay for what you need. If you go over, cool. And a lot of times it's like it scales up. So let's say like your post or like your website goes viral on Reddit. Okay, you may pay a couple bucks that month to like cover the
massive for turning results. On scaling, exactly.
Exactly. And then next month when it dies down again, like you're good to go again. You know what I mean?
That's a really good point. I think another thing that I think people don't realize is when you start out off the cloud, like maybe you have a virtual machine or you have some physical hardware, you like to have the hardware that you have physically in front of you match what's in the cloud. So you're like, well, I've got 8 gigs here.
Yeah.
So I need 8 gigs of RAM there.
Yep.
Totally not the case.
No, totally. Yeah. Scott, I worked for a large e-commerce company that has a massive Black Friday traffic. And we used to host everything on our own data centers. But the wild part about it is like, we had to make sure that we were only using that data, the full capacity one day a year. You know what I mean? But like you have to be ready for it all the time. What a pain.
And see, that is the classic cloud example, right? Yes. That's the elasticity. That's why you go to the cloud is for that one time a year when you're on Reddit or when it's Black Friday.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, I totally agree.
Cool. So when I start out with Mongo, I can just there's like multiple ways to do it. I can go to the command line. Mm. The command line tools are really easy. I've done this myself, like Mongo, Mongo store, Mongo dump and things like that. But what is the tool that you recommend? There's a bunch of them I've tried. The one I've been using lately is Studio 3T.
Oh, I've never heard of that one.
It's like a Mongo front end. Oh, but do you do your things from the command line or do you do your things from...
Do you do things?
Really?
Yeah, I totally do. Yeah, so not a lot of people may know this. We have a like serverless front end built on top of it. It's called Realm. But you can basically set up a GraphQL endpoint or serverless functions or triggers or stuff like that too. And HTTP endpoints for accessing your data too, which is really nice. But I usually just upload like functions straight to the cloud in Atlas through the CLI. That's pretty much all I've been doing. Like since I've started working here.
So you spend the time in the browser and then at the command line and you haven't felt the need to go beyond that.
No, I really haven't. Yeah. For every, and Scott, like I'm a full stack developer. But I like having serverless access to data is like been a game changer for me. I've not been setting up like servers very often these days. Mostly just serverless functions.
You know, we hear that word cloud native a lot. People hear cloud native, especially code newbies. They hear cloud native and they wonder. And really cloud native, another way to think about it is just don't ever make a virtual machine.
Yeah.
And you're cloud native. You know what I mean?
Oh, totally. Yep. You have a static front end, just upload it to like Netlify or GitHub static pages or something like that. And then you just have a like, isn't that I just set up a serverless functions to interact with my MongoDB database in the cloud, and it works, which is super cool. Now, actually, we just came out with this GraphQL thing, which I'm actually so jazzed about. But since we know the data types you have on your in your database, like because we're saving those BSON types, we can auto-generate a GraphQL endpoint with just like a click of a button. So like based on the documents you have in there, it auto-generates all the git, post, put, and delete GraphQL operations. That's pretty much all I'm using these days. It just makes it so easy. And for a lot of our applications, we just need to like get our data. You know what I mean?
And so the MongoDB documents with GraphQL, that uses a thing called the Stitch dashboard?
Yeah, exactly. I think we just rebranded to Realm, but yeah, Stitch.
To Realm.
Yeah. Yeah, there may be some old stuff in there. But yeah, Realm is what it's called. So it's like all of our servers. But there's a bunch of stuff in there. I don't know. I didn't know about it before working there. I'm like, it makes it so much easier. And like, if you're using MongoDB databases already, like, you can pretty much do all those functions in there automatically. You know, if you want to do some more complex data processing, you can even do that in the cloud, send it over before you send it to your database or whatever.
And it seems like GraphQL is a really nice complement to Mongo because it looks like what you want. You're actually declaring, I wish it looked like this.
Yeah.
And that's what you're getting. So rather than saying, here are the instructions to get the document I want, you just kind of draw the document you want.
Exactly. It makes it like, the way you're saving the data, the way you're transferring the data, and the way you're saving the data is all the same now, which is super nice, right? And you nailed it. Like, I want this data in this structure. Cool. Go throw that over to GraphQL, and it'll go retrieve all the data you want for you.
Yeah, it seems like for the basics, like for not doing left outer joins, it's very much very simple. And you can also do projections. So like my data in my blood sugar database is kind of goofy looking, and I kind of don't like the naming of a lot of it. It doesn't really look, it's not shaped how I would like it.
Yeah.
But I could project that to a different way and build my own type system on top of that.
Absolutely. No, totally agree. Yeah, I can kind of change it, mutate it, make it a little bit more user-friendly, or at least front-end developer-friendly at least, or wherever you're consuming it.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Okay. So folks can go and learn about Atlas at mongodb.com/Atlas. Again, I use that myself for my blood sugar database in Night Scout. They can check out the GraphQL API, which is really interesting. And that's MongoDB Realm, the GraphQL API. And then there's a client on top of that, which is really cool. And then where can they find you on Twitter?
You can find me at Joe Carlson at the number one. That's JoeKarsson, the number one.
All right. And we'll put that in the show notes as well as links to all the things that we chatted about. Thanks so much, Joe Carlson, for chatting with me today.
Oh, thank you, Scott.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.